Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art Beats and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Welcome in, everyone, to the Lunch Pail Draft Cast, the first and original inaugural episode, kinda, I guess is how we're going to say it. Because I'm here with Jacob Infante, and we'll be here for the foreseeable future going forward, breaking down your favorite prospects and maybe guys you haven't heard much about for this upcoming NFL draft and NFL drafts going forward, because I don't think Jacob and I plan on doing this short term. Why don't you go ahead and say hello to the people?
Hello, everyone. I am Jacob Infante. Thank you for the for bringing me in there and segueing. But yeah, we're looking to do this, you know, long-term. We're talking, you know, NFL draft here. We're talking, you know, every position, as many players as we can, the big names, some of the late round small school guys. That's really what we want to do here. It's not going to be just a typical, okay, let's talk only about Trevor Lawrence. Although our first like unofficial episode was, we did talk a lot about quarterbacks to start, but we're really digging into it here. We got some Hog Mollies discussion. I feel like you guys are really going to enjoy.
Yeah, we got some Hog Mollies. We're going hashtag Fat Lives Matter on this episode. We're getting down in the trenches. And I guess you can kind of akin it to our show. The teams are built from the outside in as the foundation. This is our foundation episode. We're laying the first pieces of groundwork.
It's poetic.
It's poetic. That's a way to put it. Look at Jacob using that college education. Look at that.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess we're not burying the lead or anything, but where do we want to start? We're going to start with the offensive line. Do we want to start interior? Do we want to start out on the, I guess you would call it the perimeter of the offensive line? Where do we want to go?
Me personally, I'm a really big fan of this offensive tackle class. So I kind of want to dig into that first, if you don't mind, just because there are so many guys I feel like can step in pretty quickly in their careers and be like a legitimate day one starter at the next level.
Absolutely. So what, I mean, the obvious names, we'll just start at the top then. So we got Rashawn Slater from Northwestern University and Penei Sewell. So both guys who did not play this past year, but are the consensus, either one or number two offensive tackles, depending on who you talk to. Where do you have those two lined up, Jacob?
Yeah, so right now I have Penei Sewell in at number one. I feel like his 2019 tape is maybe as good as almost any offensive lineman I've seen, like Quentin Nelson in Notre Dame, the 2017, I want to say, was his last year there. Like, that was incredible. I don't think that's ever going to be topped, but Penei Sewell to me is a solid second in terms of offensive line tape that I've watched. Just from the fact that he's, you know, he's big, he's strong, he's athletic, he's technically polished. Like, there's very few weaknesses in his game, in my opinion. And the fact that he's only 20 years old, like, I'm 20 years old. I tweeted out a video of me running a 40-yard dash, and I'm like half the size of Penei Sewell, and he beat me by well over half a second. Like, I think he ran like a 5.05 or something like that, like a 5.1. Mm-hmm. I was in the 5.6.
Yeah, 5.05 was the number I thought I saw, but I could be wrong on that.
Yeah, I think that's right. And he absolutely demolished me, which isn't saying much. I'm not an athlete, but Penei Sewell, all things considered.
First of all, I'm not an athlete.
I mean, we call it the Lunch Pail Draft Cast for a reason. You know,
we bring our hard hat to work with us. That's what we do, Mr. Man.
Exactly. Quicker than fast. That's the way to describe what we're going with here. But yeah, I'm a huge fan of Penei Sewell. Also a big fan of Rashawn Slater. I don't think he's as good as Penei Sewell, but I think that there's a lot to like. Athleticism, technique, just his overall intelligence. I feel like either one of those guys, you can realistically make an argument for being top 10 picks, and I'd have no problem with it. I think both of them are going to be really good players from the get-go.
I actually tend to agree with you on that one. I was higher on Penei Sewell the first time I went through his 19 tape versus the second time. I think he's got the NFL body up top. I think he could stand to maybe add a little bit in his legs, but I think, you know, he posted that picture on his social media and he kind of got the label of soft bodied, which he's, I mean, anyone who's ever been around a weight room, that's just a big, strong human.
Yeah.
But he's, what is he? I'm pulling up his RAS, which is basically a way of tracking someone's size and weight and athleticism in a composite score, which was developed by Kent Platt, I believe, of Pro Football Network. But he's 6'4", 331 pounds, and he benched 225 30 times at his pro day and ran a 5.09. He scored an overall 9.09 out of 10 on his RAS, a.k.a. very good, great. I guess you could even consider it elite, just to put that out there. So very, very good. I think he could stand to add more in his lower half, but it's not like he's tiny. Like, he's a big, strong kid.
Yeah.
And to your point, he is 20. He's 20. Like, that's I am legitimately 10 years older than this guy. That's Looney Tunes to me. But he, you know, he's really good. Could he be taller? Sure. You could argue that you could, I think his arms measured in at 32 inches, I believe. So would you like him a little longer? Sure. But he reaches that threshold, which is, you know, what everybody wants. Yeah. He plays. What I really like about it, I like, especially online, I think at the line of scrimmage, I like when guys have an attitude to them and play with a motor that quote unquote runs hot. Penei Sewell has a motor that runs hot. He plays with a nasty demeanor. And that's something you almost need from your offensive lineman. So he's a good athlete. He's strong, could get stronger. You know, I think he could stand to work on his footwork and his kick steps a little bit, but I mean, that comes with practice. Again, he hasn't played in literally a calendar year. So everything's going based off of his 2019 tape, which, to be truthful with you, I kind of caught glimpses of him when I was evaluating Herbert last year. So that's kind of what first tipped me off. And then I try not to get into the next year's class if they're not eligible until I actually sit down and evaluate them. But he was kind of impossible to miss with the offense that Oregon runs. Now
that's saying a lot, because Oregon, we remember, I want to say like 3-4 of those guys ended up getting drafted along that offensive line back in 2020. So that's a really good group. And Penei Sewell jumped off the page. I'm right there with you. When I was watching Justin Herbert, I'm like, okay, this left tackle kid, this Sewell guy, he's really good.
Yeah, especially with the amount of like tunnel screens, bubble screens, you know, little short, whatever. They ran the most screens in college football with Justin Herbert, notoriously, which was what ended up killing his stock, this, that, the other. But when you have to do that, one of the big screen things with bubble screens and tunnel screens and whatever other, you know, there's tons of different sorts of screens. There's even middling screens where the line pulls up and in front of the center. You know, there's just tons of stuff you can do. And one of the big things for that is having to be athletic. And you know, you can go through the years of Oregon offensive linemen coming into the league, going back to even Kyle Long, you know, they've always been pretty high level athletes. There was Tyrell Crosby, I think 2 years ago, who tested really well, but hasn't really panned out. You know, you can go down the line and they've always done one thing at Oregon with their offensive linemen. They've always been athletic, probably because of the scheme that they run.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a necessity when you run that many screens, you know, like you're saying, you need to have offensive linemen who can move around, who can, you know, potentially get to that second level and can chase down linebackers or defensive backs in space. And I feel like that's something that I think has absolutely helped Penei Sewell, just his ability to get out of space. And, you know, tying in that that debate about length and arm length and stuff, yeah, I mean, he isn't necessarily as tall as we would have hoped, and his arms maybe aren't as long as we would have expected. But ultimately, it comes down to whether he's able to, like, seal off that arc for opposing edge rushers. And he can do that. He can get there with just his athleticism coming out and just adjusting his set point and taking those precise angles. I feel like that's something he can do very well. And truth be told, I've always heard that 34 inches is the benchmark for offensive tackles. Granted, I haven't done as much in-depth look on that myself.
I thought 32. I might be misremembering. So 34 could be the number. And I think he is the one that just – he literally hit the threshold. So let
me see. Yeah, I feel like arm length, I mean, obviously it helps. And we're going
to – we might both be wrong. I think it's 33. I think 32, 33 is like the threshold for being a tackle before they got to kick you inside.
Yeah.
And 34 is the ideal, I think, is what it is.
Okay, yeah, because so, I remember
– just to clear that up for our listeners.
Yeah, I think it was 2019. People were talking about Jonah Williams and his arm length. Mm-hmm. Now that I remember, I think he just made it in as 33 and like a quarter inch or something like that. And everyone's like, oh, maybe he's going to kick into guard. But, you know, that wasn't the case. So, and again, I don't have that in front of me, but I do feel like from a pure arm length perspective, yeah, it helps. And we're obviously going to be talking about some more offensive tackles later on in the show here who have that arm length in spades. I know there's one guy in particular that I'm sure you want to get to. Just a little foreshadowing there. The small school guy is pretty big. I feel like Penei Sewell, it's not a huge issue for me.
And, no, it's not. It's like whatever. I think the arm issue thing. So the arm issue thing for me at length. So when we go forward talking more after we go through our different positions and whatnot leading up to the draft, there's a rule I think that used to be very much the truth when it comes to line play. You either have to be athletic enough to get to the spot or long enough to get to the spot. If you have both, that's great. And there are a select few guys, think Trent Williams coming out of Oklahoma State years ago, who was big enough and strong enough and long enough to get there, but also just supremely athletic enough. You know, is Sewell the most generational offensive tackle I've ever seen coming out of college? No. Is he really, really good? Yes, and I also understand I'm the guy that if you go back through my timeline, I'm also the guy who said he's a very good offensive tackle prospect, but I also said he might be a generational guard prospect. Now, that take that for how you will. It's not saying I dislike him as a tackle. I'm just saying he might be better as a guard. But I would only do that if he proves to you at a certain point that he just isn't meant to be a tackle in this league. Now, I guess moving forward to the other guy that sits atop the class is Rashawn Slater. Again, I don't know how else to explain it other than a really overused term. He's a technician. Everything he does is just – he's basically – if you're an offensive tackle in high school and you want to get recruited and you want to see how to play the position, you put on Rashawn Slater and say, do that. there's no other way to describe it. Again, another guy I think might be better as a guard because he is a little bit smaller, but he is a standout tackle prospect, and you're not pushing these guys in unless they prove they can't do it at the NFL level. It's the same idea as, you know, you heard people talking about when Quentin Nelson came out of Notre Dame, as we alluded to earlier. People are like, is he good enough to play tackle? Probably, but are you going to take a Hall of Fame guard prospect and kick him outside and make him maybe just an above average tackle? Who knows?
Yeah, and I feel like with Rashawn Slater, it's actually funny you mentioned that with Penei Sewell, where he can be a very good tackle, maybe an even better guard. That's where I'm at with Rashawn Slater right now, because I actually projected him as a guard for a while. I recently made the switch and put him back at tackle. Because I look at that position and I see a lot of translatable traits and just his athleticism, his ability to move, that technique. I feel like especially blocking on the move in those condensed spaces, technique is huge.
And you're absolutely right. He might thrive better in a phone booth because of his technique.
Yeah, and I feel like to that point, we look back at last year's offensive tackle class, which was also really good. Mm-hmm. People were saying potentially, is Tristan Wirfs going to move out into guard? Is Jedrick Wills going to move back into guard? Because if I recall correctly, they didn't have elite physical like size measurements, but right. Both of them have played at tackle. Wills had a really good rookie year. Tristan Wirfs was incredible his rookie year, and both of them stayed at tackle. So with that in mind, I do think both of them will stay at tackle. Sure, you can move them at guard, and I feel like that's definitely a possibility. But I think that tackle is where you'll play them at the next level until, like you said, until they prove
otherwise. Right, absolutely. Exactly. And then I guess, so we've spent a little bit of time on the big guys. I mean, I'm just I'm pulling up my numbers, which is the Apple equivalent of Excel. Just to pull up some of my thoughts and processes and stuff. So moving on, I guess it's obviously this is my most updated that I released, but I've, you know, I'm just like you, I'm sure you move guys around as you rewatch and watch.
Yeah.
As of this moment in time, my third best tackle in the draft I do still have is Christian Darrisaw. And something I want to put out here for anyone and everyone listening, you will hear me say I think he's a right tackle only guy. I was notorious in saying that I felt that about Trent Brown a couple years ago coming out of Oklahoma, saying that I thought he was a right tackle only. Obviously this year when Ronnie Stanley went down and he filled in, he was very apt at being a left tackle in this league and can clearly do it. I am not saying this as a bad thing. In today's NFL, a right tackle is just as valuable as a left tackle. You need to have guys to protect the edge because if you do that, you're making life harder on the edge rushers and giving the quarterback a clean pocket to step into. It's just that simple. It's a very easy thing. So I know when you hear that, some people tend to think, well, you're pigeonholing him, this, that, the other, but Christian Darrisaw is a guy, or as a player from Virginia Tech University, 6'5", he's 315 pounds, and he might be the most, for my eye at least, the most explosive tackle in this class in terms of just of how he's able to get out and go.
Yeah, I agree with that. I feel like when watching Christian Darrisaw's tape, athleticism is a huge thing that stands out to me, and I'm a sucker for athletic offensive linemen, tackles especially. And I feel like watching Darrisaw's tape, he has that in spades, just his ability to, you know, burst coming out of his stance and that initial first step or two that he has in pass protection, I really like. And then his ability to accelerate, climb to the second level, I feel like that's mm-hmm. something that is really helpful, especially in like that zone type of scheme. I feel like just that ability to move and, you know, work off of guys, I feel like that's
some
athleticism can come in handy. And I have him as my OT3 as well. So I'm absolutely with you there. I think he can be, it could be a top 15 pick when it's all said and done in this class.
He could be. And I initially thought he was going to be top 25 ish, but you know, when you start testing and you see the size so you'll hear both Jacob and I probably refer to things in this draft is he really well put together or really set spaced out well. Darrisaw is a put together human being. He is thick and muscular throughout his frame. He's got long arms. He's big and strong and fast. Could he play left tackle? Sure. But I believe he only, to my knowledge and what I've watched, he's only ever played right tackle at Virginia Tech. So I would be more comfortable leaving him there. Similarly to a guy who's become almost like a darling in this class in Tevin Jenkins. So I've got my own thoughts on Tevin Jenkins. I know he's gotten a lot of run, especially since our buddy EJ Snyder and his co-host of the Bootleg Football Content, Brett Coleman, brought up the fact that they think he is this probably one of the two or three best, or probably the third best tackle in their eyes, you know, and that's what the draft is. We all have different evaluating practices and whatnot. I've got questions about Jenkins in terms of who was he lined up against, I guess, would be the best way to put it. Like, he played some good players, specifically against, like, Oklahoma and Texas when they played – oh, what's the edge defender from Texas? I'm drawing a blank.
Joseph Osai.
And he did well, but I just have questions because the Big 12 is notoriously just offense and high-flying, throw the ball, get the ball in the end zone, get, you know, do your best to stop them. If not, do it again. So he's got tons of experience in pass protection, and he's another guy. He's another player that he's angry. I'm reminded of a story to kind of switch gears on sports. The Bulls have had a player they drafted named Bobby Portis, who's now playing for the Milwaukee Bucks. But he said in order to get revved up for games, he would picture people insulting or physically assaulting his mother because of this is the mindset he had to be in.
Yeah.
It's like, that's kind of what I think like is happening. Like, or you can go back to, I think it was Big John Henderson of the Jacksonville Jaguars who would have the trainer slap him in the face before going onto the field because he couldn't play unless he tasted blood in his mouth. Oh, like, geez. There's just something different about Tevin Jenkins, and he's a very explosive athlete. I think, and you can watch that, especially with his first kick step out, where he takes this really long, exaggerated right kick step out, and he sets himself versus where some guys take like the shorter gather step and kick out further to like reestablish. So Tevin Jenkins, the way he does that is it's a little bit, I wouldn't say strange, but just a bit uncommon. It's just not a typical way people do things.
Yeah, I feel like with Tevin Jenkins, I mean, athleticism, at least on tape, isn't necessarily his calling card. I feel like he's very much a guy who wins with strength, a guy who wins with nastiness. He's more a guy who's going to lock you up and then shove you into the ground than your, you know, typical finesse offensive tackle. I feel like he's not a bad athlete. I don't want to say that because there are absolutely offensive tackles who aren't as athletic as he is, but he has a bit of a unique approach in pass protection and just his footwork and the angles that he takes there. So I feel like it kind of makes up for the lack of elite burst that he has coming out. I feel like it's not necessarily as explosive as a guy like a Christian Darrisaw or a Samuel Cosmi, you know, guys who have that raw top-notch athleticism. So I feel like Tevin Jenkins has to win a little bit more with being more precise in his footwork. And then once he gets that done, once he's able to figure that out, then he can just lock you down, because there are very few edge rushers, at least on tape that we saw, that were able to truly test him from a power perspective.
Yeah, it's not like, again, we're not saying he played nothing but bums, but it's hard to get a gauge when Joseph Osai is probably the benchmark of who you played.
Yeah, although I will say, though, I remember watching him against Oklahoma. Ronnie Perkins did.
Ronnie Perkins. Ronnie Perkins gave him a hard time. Yeah, absolutely. You brought him up. At a point, I did have Sam Cosmi as OT1 in this class.
Really?
I did, yeah. He's since been knocked down to, I believe I have him at 6 right now. Yeah, 6.
Okay.
It's nothing against him, but there was – I guess it's not entirely true. I guess there are some circulating rumors that there's maybe an alcohol issue with Sam Cosmi. We'll see. It remains unfounded. I want that to be completely clear. I've just seen it circulated a couple times. There's no actual backing of this kid having any issue. I don't want to slander his name, anything like that. But Cosmi, the thing that I notice about him is the fluidity in which he moves. Like, whereas something like when Darrisaw moves, it's like, I'm going to pound it. I'm going to explode and release and go.
Yeah.
Versus Cosme's almost like an easy mover. Like, everything he does just looks really like almost butter with how smooth it is. It's just everything's so easy looking for him. And for a guy that size, it shouldn't be that way. Like,
exactly. Because like he's like 6'7", I want to say.
Yeah, he's 6'7". and he's here. Let me pull up his RAS page. You'll hear me bring this up a lot just because I do like just the, it's a quick little all in one. Like, oh, this is it. Daniel Cosme RAS. Okay. So Cosme scored a perfect 10 out of 10.
Of course
he did. He ran a 4.87 40 yard dash at 6.5 and or six, just short of 6.6. So he's 6.5 and 5/8, 315 pounds. He hit 225 36 times. He had a 30 inch vert and a 9'10" broad. Okay,
bananas.
So, and his short shuttle was 4.39. His three cone was 9.62. Okay, so for anyone listening out there, he's a cartoon character, is what he is. He's not real. So before I get into why I had him at offensive tackle one, why don't you delve into it, and I'll let you just do what you do.
Yeah, so with Samuel Cosme, I was in that same boat. I feel like he's such a fluid athlete, and his movements are – he's almost kind of like a power forward at the offensive tackle position, just the way that he moves, just his lateral quickness and how fluid he looks. I mean, you know, exploding out of his stance, yeah, it's not the same type of explosiveness as Christian Darrisaw where, you know, Daniel, like you mentioned, where he, you know, fire out and I want to pummel you into the ground. I feel like Samuel Cosme is a bit more of a finesse guy for sure. But overall, I think that just the athleticism that he brings, how easy he moves in pass protection. And I'm going to mention this probably several times in the course of this episode alone, but I really like offensive tackles who can move well, because I feel like that's where the NFL is trending right now with, you know, how pass heavy it is in most circumstances. I feel like an athletic offensive tackle is a really valuable asset. And if you have a guy like Cosme who can move as well as he can, I mean, sure, he can get a little bit stronger. I mean, he had an incredible bench press, but I feel like his anchor strength can improve a little bit and he can get a little bit lower and getting his weight underneath him at the point of attack. But ultimately, so you're looking at a really good athlete.
So with a guy like him, when you get to that 6'6", 6'7" range, you almost wonder if they're bordering on getting to that too tall point, because then you have a lot more frame to fill out. And then you've got, so that, you know, means slenderer legs, smaller trunk, longer arms, longer torso. So it's just a lot more to fill. And it's not a bad thing. Cosme is pretty well put together. I wouldn't say he's like, I don't think of Christian Darrisaw when I look at him. but he is, I agree with you. He could afford to put on a little more weight to help with his anchor strength. I also wonder what he could do in terms of working on the finer points of his kick, step, slide. He's more of a waist bender than he is knee, like sinking his hips and bending his knees, when you're that upper body strong, as he clearly is, as evident by the bench press number, and have those long arms and just the size he has, you're going to be prone to that, because you can almost one arm him, where you reach and you kind of just get a hand on him and then gravitate with the other hand. Like I said, at one point I did have him as offensive tackle one, because I'll be the first one to tell you, I think majority of these numbers you see coming out in terms of 40 times and whatnot are a little bit skewed.
Fabricated. Yeah.
So, but the baseline is whatever the number is, add 0.07 to it. So with Cosme 4.87, 4.94, that's still
really good.
It's absurd for a guy that size still.
Exactly.
I mean, and the thing is, that plays on tape. You watch him and it's just, he's the best athlete on the line at any given point.
Absolutely.
And it's just so hard to ignore that. And he does have the added benefit of going against a guy like Joseph Osai every single day in practice. So if I'm going to knock, you know, if I'm going to knock other guys from Big 12 competition, I got to knock Cosme for it. The difference is he has someone on his own team that he can go against every day in practice.
Yeah.
So he's knocked down a bit just because I'm not sure if he's I'm not sure if he's scheme diverse. I think he might just be relegated to outside zone sort of stuff because of his athleticism and his weak anchor. I wouldn't trust him to gap or power.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Like power scheme. Like I think he's kind of almost limited to an outside zone because he is a little, like I said, he's got a long torso, long leg. He is a thinner at 315 pounds, a thinner offensive tackle at 6'7". So he has room to grow. Will he grow? Maybe. It might be harder for that frame to get filled out the way that he want, that NFL teams would like him to, but we'll see.
Yeah, I feel like that outside zone is actually a perfect fit for Cosme because we mentioned, you know, that ability to move, I feel like would suit him super well. And that reach that he has, those long arms, mm-hmm. It doesn't matter as much if he's a little bit thinner in his lower half because of just his ability to lock out guys with how long his arms are and his ability to move. I feel like that would absolutely help him. And you're right. I don't think Cosme is this scheme transcendent type of offensive tackle. I can say like a Penei Sewell or Rashawn Slater could fit in just about any scheme. I can't really say that about Sam Cosme, but that's not necessarily a knock on the guy. It's just the way his skill set is. I have him at tackle 5 right now.
Okay. So you have him a little higher than I do.
A little bit. And I think he's a quality second round guy. I feel like he honestly might be getting undervalued in national circles because I see him going like mid late second round. I'd be mm-hmm. comfortable taking him near the back end of the first just because of his upside.
As would I. I'd be comfortable with him there. I guess. So my current offensive tackle 4 is actually Jalen Mayfield.
Okay.
I don't know. I watch him and I just feel like in a sense, and I hate saying this almost because it almost devalues things or overvalues things, but Michigan offensive linemen typically translate. Even going back to last year, you look at who came out with, you know, John Runyon Jr. and Michael Onwenu, where they came in and immediately helped. And then you figure in Jalen Mayfield is a better prospect. Something that I noticed about him with how he plays, he is strong, not overly so, but he's a good, not great athlete. I think he is, for what everything that Cosme's not, I think Mayfield can play both schemes. And you could even have the diversity of if you took him in the back end of round one, but you didn't need a tackle, I think you could play him at guard. And I don't think he would care. I think he just wants to play football.
Yeah. I've heard some people say that Jalen Mayfield could fit as a guard of the next level. I am projecting him tackle, but I feel like absolutely. He's the type of guy you just draft, not necessarily considering need and just considering, okay, we need an offensive lineman. Here's a guy who can play just about anywhere. We'll fit him in wherever. And then he'd do well. I feel like he's a little bit more athletic. I mean, at least from what you mentioned, I feel like there are more athletic guys in this class, but I don't think he's bad. I feel like he's pretty coordinated and he's got solid enough, you know, acceleration to the second level, but I agree. I feel like he's the type of guy, he can fit guard or tackle in just about any scheme because he's strong. And I feel like that there's a difference there between,
And for everything like we were talking about with Cosme and guys like that, for as much as he's not, I don't think he's overly explosive, but I think he's a good athlete. And I think he's good in a short area and he's good at getting into his pass set and getting himself ready to block.
Yeah.
He's got really strong. But at the same time, when you're comparing him to someone like Cosme, he is very strong in his base and he's got really strong sets and he's got these big, strong legs and he's able to hold himself when he does come up against a good power rusher who can, you know, you'll hear those terms, convert speed to power. And when you factor in when he's playing for everything, the Big 12 is not in producing pass rushers, the Big 10's the antithesis. where they have pass rushers and edge defenders out the wazoo because that's what the Big Ten does. They run the football and they attack the passer. You know, it's just how the conferences are made.
Yeah. I mean, that Big Ten style of play, it's a bit nastier than some of those other conferences, especially like the Big 12 or the Pac 12, where it's a bit more
now,
like something oriented, I want to say.
Yeah. And the thing I will tell you is, for as good as his lateral short area mobility is, and I think he's plenty long enough, he is green.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a ton of playing time under his belt. He was forced to mature in a hurry and be ready for a team that, you know, I guess most people would tell you that the Wolverines have been underachieving for the most part under Jim Harbaugh, but I think he's plenty fine. I have no issue with Mayfield, and I actually really, really like him. As similar to how you were saying, I would have no qualms taking him late round one or even early high two, which really speaks to this class where you could make the argument. You could see potentially 5, 6, maybe even 7 offensive tackles going. Will it happen? Probably not. No, but you could make the argument where when you really look at the top end of it, it's just like, holy crap.
Yeah, exactly. Like there are a lot of offensive tackles I think are on that borderline. I could see them going late first round. You know, will they go there again? Like you said, that might be a different story. But there are a lot of guys, you know, we're talking like Samuel Cosmi, Jalen Mayfield. I'm not sure how you feel about other guys, but like Dylan Raddins, guys like that.
So I was actually just going to ask you how you felt about him.
And Dylan Raddins. So I am a fan of his. I feel like obviously not having a 2020 season, being a small school guy, might naturally hurt his stock a little bit. But I'm not as concerned about his ability to translate to the next level just because we saw him at the Senior Bowl, very little signs of rust, no signs of rust, honestly. And obviously that's not the give and take of, you know, success at the NFL level, but it did help. And I look at Dylan Raddins, I see another guy kind of in that mold to Sam Cosmi, where he's a little bit thinner in his lower half. He's not as thickly built as a guy like Jalen Mayfield might be, but I feel like he's a bit more polished, which is a little bit weird to say, because him being a small school guy, you'd figure that Jalen Mayfield coming from Michigan would have the better hand usage or the better pad level. And I think Raddins is better in both of those, honestly. And he's another one of those guys, might be scheme transcendent. I do like him a bit better in zone, in his outside zone sort of situation where you can utilize his mobility and just how, you know, his coordination. But I feel like you can play him just about anywhere. And I think he'll go second round. But I really wouldn't be too mad at a team if they went with him like really late in the first round, just because of that upside factor.
I agree. But it's funny how, again, this is where you start seeing the difference in eyes. When I watch him, I see a power set right tackle. Now I will openly admit that was also a lot of my notes on him were prior to his pro day testing, where he tested way better than I thought his tape showed. And maybe that is just because of what North Dakota State runs and what they do. But you know, it's just one of those things. I was watching him, I'm like, I think he's a power gap or a power scheme right tackle. Now that's not a bad thing, but
definitely not,
you know, it's just one of those things. I guess I was just bringing it up because it goes to show what, you know, you can watch the same guys and see something different.
Yeah. Like the thing is, like, you and I don't really disagree on much of anything. Especially what I've been noticing talking here and talking in the past, is that we're on, you know, a similar level for a lot of different guys. So to be able to talk like, you know, look at that and say, okay, you know, there's a little bit of difference of opinion here. I definitely see where you're coming from with that. I mean, we saw a lot of North Dakota State's offense is, I guess you want to say pro style, which admittedly, I feel like the definition of an NFL offense is changing more and more by the year. But if you're looking for a bit more of that power gap type of scheme, I feel like Dylan Raddins could fit there. He's proven he can. And I do agree. I feel like he's a better fit as a right tackle at the next level, but I feel like he can play left if need be. So overall, though, I think you're getting a good quality starter along the offensive line for sure.
Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniels, Tennessee Honey, and Cope Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
There are a lot of questions around what you eat. How is it made? Where does it come from? What are the impacts of its packaging? The What You're Eating podcast is here to help you understand how your food gets to your plate and put into context the full impact of the food you eat, whether that's on animals, the planet, or other people. Join host Jerusha Klemperer, director of Foodprint, as she dives deeper to uncover the problems with the industrial food system and offer examples of more sustainable practices. She provides practical advice for how you can help support a better ecosystem through the food that you buy and the systemic changes you push for. From practical conversations with farmers and chefs to discussions with policy experts on the barriers to sustainability, the What You're Eating podcast covers more than just the what. It covers everything from the why to the how of the food you love to eat. Listen and subscribe to What You're Eating at foodprint.org/whatyoureeating or wherever you get your podcasts.
Absolutely. So in that same vein of the small school, I think this is a good time as ever to bring up a guy I have a soft spot for. And that it's, again, from that I believe it's the I want to call it the Gateway Conference because that's what they were when I was there, when I was at SIU. But no, it's the Valley. So yeah, at UNI. And that's Spencer Brown. And the first thing that pops off is I'll admit I was late to the Spencer Brown train, and it's why it's so funny that I'm so high on him. I didn't really know who he was because Dylan Raddins was the guy everyone was talking about from the FCS at the tackle position. And then we got to the measurements at the Senior Bowl, and good God almighty, here comes this kid, Spencer Brown, and he's 6'9", 312 pounds with an 83 inch wingspan, 34 inch arms, and 10.5 inch hands. Oh, and it's just one of those things, like I'm going through there and I'm watching and I'm looking at him getting weighed in, and I was just like, what is that behemoth in Mobile, Alabama? What is that thing? And you can't help but it's not like bad things that I'm saying. It's just, he's huge. Yeah. And you're like, holy God, Lord. And I go back and I start watching him, and I will be the first one to tell you, he's either going to be really, really, really good, or he'll be out of the league in like 4 years. And I just don't know how else to say that without just sounding like an idiot. Probably a bit too tall, but he's really, really well put together. Needs to add more weight to anchor well, but he plays with a nastiness, and he pushes people around, and he gets his hands on guys, which I know sounds really stupid, but you will watch linemen occasionally, especially at the FCS level, who just let guys get into their body and let them get pushed around. So he extends and he pushes, he initiates contact before you initiate with him. And he actually makes really good use for a guy who's really not a tremendous athlete, because he is so large and almost clunky. but he is able to reroute players and really use that gift of strength and that mentality he plays with to win.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like
I really like him. It's probably because of the nasty edge and just, oh my God, he's huge.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that you mentioned that just the overall usage of his hands. He doesn't like guys in his frame. And that's something I love watching him because, one, he's massive. He's freaking ginormous. But he's also a nasty guy. And I feel like that's, you know, a combination that some guys don't have, where they have good raw power, but they don't necessarily have that elite, like, nasty edge to them. And I feel like that's something Spencer Brown has. Just the willingness to want to drive guys into the dirt. And he's a good athlete too. I mean, we saw his pro day, came away with a 4.94 40 yard dash, 4.4 shuttle time, a 6.96 three cone drill. And he put up 29 reps in the bench press, which is tough to do for a guy who's, you know, 6'8", listed, you know, earlier at 6'9". You have that long of arms, it's tougher to bench press. Just because you have to go all the way down with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's much easier to do it when you're a little bit more compact like that. But doesn't matter to Spencer Brown, because he's, you know, a freak of nature, it seems like. And is he raw? I think absolutely.
Yes, very raw.
Very raw. And if you're taking him, you're going to want to be patient with him, because there are a lot of aspects of the fundamentals and the technical aspects of offensive tackle play that he doesn't necessarily have yet. But if you can get your hands on him, put him in a good system, I feel like he could really thrive. And I totally agree. He's either going to be really good or out of the league in 4 years. When do teams want to take a shot at that? I don't know. I feel like it could be pretty high though, just because of that upside factor alone.
Yeah. And now to kind of jump back to a completely different, like, mold. Lately, Notre Dame has been an offensive line factory.
You go back to
Quentin Nelson, the right tackle, whose name I'm drawing a blank on in San Francisco. Mike McGlinchey, Ronnie Stanley in Baltimore. There's just a lot of Notre Dame offensive linemen, and that could be, you know, you could credit it to the old offensive line coach there, who coached for the Bears. You could just credit it to how Brian Kelly recruits. But Liam Eichenberg is a player I think is not sexy. I mean in a good way. Like, it's hard for linemen to quote unquote be sexy at all. Like, it's just because you don't get no credit for anything. But Eichenberg is just plug and play right tackle. Like, here he is. He's slow, but he's strong. He kind of just is. He's an out of the box right tackle. Like, oh, here he is. He's in his box. Take him out, put him there. He was right tackle, and he'll start for 5 to 6 years. He is. There's nothing wrong with that. I don't really want to, like, degrade it and make it seem like there's nothing to talk about, but there's like with him there, it's a solid second, third round pick maybe.
Yeah.
It's just not sexy. Like, I don't know how else to explain him. He's good, not great. He's strong. He is a pretty decent technician for everything he lacks athletically. Yeah. I don't really want him in a zone scheme, 'cause he's clunky.
Like, yeah.
But he's fine. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
You're drafting a starter, I think, when you take him though, which is cool. Like, it's a good pick.
Exactly. And like, he's the type of guy he can start for a while in the league. Will he ever be great? I don't know, but I do feel pretty confident that he's going to be good at the very least, which offensive tackles are pretty tough to come by, like, good.
Exactly.
So that makes me think, you know, he will go pretty high. I don't think he's a first round guy. I know people were talking about that at one point. I never really saw it, just because
he's not athletic enough.
He's not athletic enough. And that limits his upside tremendously. Just, I feel like his lateral movements and his overall body control, I feel, you know, kind of lack, but He's strong. He uses his hands well. He's intelligent.
He operates within himself. Like, there's something to be said for operating within what you know how to do. Exactly. And that's what he does. He's I know it sounds like it's so bad. Like, I'm almost ragging on him for just being who he is, but that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like, cool, whatever. Here's Liam Eikenberg. Have fun and move on. Move along. Yep.
You got a good starter for however many years. Don't have to worry about that. I mean, it's not the sexiest pick by any means. And you take him, it's going to be like, oh, okay, we got a tackle. Cool. But he's going to – I feel pretty confident he'll be solid in the league. It's just a matter of if he's ever going to be great. In that case, I don't know. But he's good, though. I'll give him that. He's a good player.
Yeah, good. And there's nothing wrong with just being good. Not every prospect's going to be this guy you're going to fawn over. I guess moving on to a guy that his RAS made me look real bad. And I really liked him, and I thought he was this great athlete on tape, and I really need to go back and rewatch him because I'm probably wrong based on how he tested. But I really thought a team getting James Hudson in like the third or fourth round might have had a chance to be picking the best tackle in the draft. And then he went out and tested at his pro day and gave me a nice big old shit burger to eat. And I don't appreciate that, James. Here I am standing for you everywhere I can, and you go out and do that. So Let me put this out there. James Hudson on tape, I thought, while raw, looked like he had every bit of what you wanted as a premier left tackle if you were willing to wait.
Yeah.
Because he's 6'5", I want to say. Let me go pull up his – yeah, he's 6 foot – 6 foot – just short of 6'5", 6 foot 4.5". He's 315 pounds. He only did 225 22 times. And then it gets really ugly from there. 5.27 unofficial 40, 4.79 shuttle, 8.053 cone. He had a decent vert, 28.5 inches, and he broad jumped just over 8 feet. Woof.
Yeah.
Like it just goes to show. I thought guys like Raddins just didn't look great athletically on tape, and I thought Hudson looked like a guy who was unbelievably athletic and just needed time to be worked with.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show you how your eyes can deceive you. And I still think Hudson can end up a good player. Might he be better suited at guard when you could factor in those testing numbers? Yeah, because I honestly thought when I was watching Hudson, I saw shades of what I thought was Dwayne Brown in Houston and Seattle watching him. You know, a little bit softer bodied, but really good athlete, you know, had room to fill out. And that was my quote-unquote guy, for lack of a better term. And I'll admit, I probably have to go back and rewatch him because I haven't since that came out, that since those numbers came out, because it kind of took the wind out of my sails on him. And I don't know. I figured we should cover it because we're not always right on what we think we see. But that was a gut punch for me because it's like, I'll admit, offensive tackle is not my best eval spot. And that's just one where it's like, I thought I was so right. And here I am with these numbers and the versus the tape, and just the completely, it's two ends of the spectrum.
Yeah. And I was with you there. I mean, I wasn't as high on Hudson as you were coming out. But I do feel like I thought he was a good athlete on tape. He stood out to me, which I was really surprised, you know, putting up a 5.34. Like, I thought, okay, this guy's going to run like a 5.0 flat or like a 5.1 or something and put together, you know, a solid performance. But that pro day, even in that sort of setting where you kind of tend to skewer the numbers a little bit there, he still didn't put up a great performance, which was surprising to me. I thought he looked pretty mobile on tape. That was something that I liked, just his ability to, you know, accelerate and both in a straight line climbing the second level, and as well as
I thought he was a zone left tackle. That's what I thought he was. And it's just,
yeah, I don't know. That's what I thought too. I mean, I watch him and absolutely, I feel like he's, you know, pretty raw. You mentioned that term, waistbender versus kneebender. I thought he was a bit of a waistbender more because he can't really get super low. And I feel like his weight distribution was a little bit off. Like, I don't know if you've noticed this. I feel like he leans over a little bit too much.
Like he almost kicks his ass out before he does anything else.
Yeah.
But I just, I guess I literally just fell in love with the idea of could be versus what looking what he was. Cause I saw certain plays where it's like, he's getting out to the second level on an end around or whatever it might be. And he's running step for step with someone, but you know, maybe he, there are guys that just play better on tape. Maybe he's one of those players. Maybe he's not. I don't know. Only time will tell. But that went from – he's probably got a player who went from 3 or 4 to – you might get him 5 or 6 now.
Yeah.
Just because that testing was so egregiously bad.
Yeah, and I don't know exactly with him because I entered not super-duper high on him, and then I watched him at the Senior Bowl, and I'm like, okay – I can still see this guy's raw, but I was a really big fan of how he performed. And then he went to the pro day and then put together, you know, a pretty average day. So I don't know exactly where I stand with him. I feel like he's a guy, you know, take a shot on in the 4th round. You know, if he falls to the 5th, I'd still definitely take him just because of how good his tape was. But yeah, I agree. I think it was kind of disappointing. I actually have one guy that I kind of want to bring up real quick, if you don't mind.
We'll make this the last tackle, and then we'll move on to somebody else.
Yeah, and then we can, you know, dig in other situations. But one guy that I'm really happy I watched pretty late in my tape-watching process, Stone Forsythe out of Florida. This dude, he measured in on his pro day at 6'8" flat, and he ran a 5.13. 40-yard dash and put up a 7.47 3-cone drill, which is insane to me just because he's so big. And I'm not going to go super deep into him because I know we got a lot of guys we want to talk about here, but Stone Forsythe is actually the last offensive lineman I watched, and I'm really happy I watched him just because he's a powerful dude. He's a massive dude, and I think he's an absolute wrecking ball of a human being. So I just wanted to give him a quick little shout-out here before we move on because – I feel like he hasn't been talked about a lot. Buzz is picking up a little bit around him. I think he could go a lot higher than even I realized just like a week or two ago.
So the in that same vein, a guy I'll bring up that I really, really was wishing wasn't hurt or missing or opting out of seasons, and that's Walker Little.
Yeah.
Where the argument can be made of the tape when he's healthy. You could make the argument he's the best tackle in this class, but he's hurt. He's older now. He opted out.
Yeah.
Three strikes, man. Yeah. Like he was going to be a first round tackle. Like, and he got hurt in 19. He opted out of 20. 6'7", 3'10". I really wanted to see him play. And I think some team's going to take him in the 2nd or 3rd round and get themselves a steal if he's healthy.
Yeah, and I feel like if he was if he didn't have those injury concerns and he was able to play in 2020, then absolutely I feel like we're looking at a 1st-round guy. Heck, if he didn't get hurt back in 2019, I feel like he'd be in the NFL already. Because remember back prior to that 2019 season – everyone was talking about him as a 1st-round guy. And now we look at him, you know, late day 2 type of guy. I feel like there's a lot to like there. It's just a matter of if you can overlook those concerns, if you can prove to teams that he's still that guy he was back in that 2018 tape, which I mean, I think he can be, I think he will be that high caliber guy at the next level. It's just a matter of if teams are willing to overlook some of those concerns, which there's a lot there, but if you're willing to take a shot on the guy, absolutely, I feel like it's worth a shot.
So what do you say to this proposal before we move on? What if we make this the exterior lineman where we do edge defenders next, and then we give another episode either later this week or earlier next week for we'll go interior. We'll go big uglies twice and give the people exactly what they need and want.
I like that a lot. I feel like one episode doesn't do – the hog molly's enough service. And absolutely. We did, you know, talked a lot about offensive tackle. I feel like it's only fair
Class is. I mean, and then you factor in, I forget who it is off the top of my head, because, you know, you have so many names running through your head at any given point. But there's a, I think it's the, oh, who is it? He's like a 25-year-old prospect. What is his name? It'll come to me later, but whatever. I'm trying to think. He's like a 25-year-old from like Washington or something, who's like a really highly regarded prospect, and I just can't think of his name, but he's 25. It's like,
I'm trying to, it wouldn't be one of the BYU guys, right?
That's it. It is the BYU kid, the BYU left tackle.
Brady Christensen,
who I know our friend of the show, EJ Snyder, is very high on. And I went back and watched him. You know, we're all allowed our own opinion. He's good. I worry that he's 25.
Yeah.
Like, how much upside is left there, but let's move on. Let's go to our edge defenders for the remaining 15, 20 minutes that we got here. So let me, before we actually get into names and some quick breakdowns, I think this edge class kind of reeks.
Yeah.
I hate saying that, because it's between edge rushers and quarterbacks, edge rushers, interior rushers, and the guys that protect the quarterback. So tackle, interior rusher, exterior edge rusher, quarterback, and the guys that protect are your most important positions on the field, with cornerbacks slowly keep creeping up on all those guys.
Yeah.
This draft just, it's like, I could make the argument Micah Parsons would be the best edge rusher in this class, and he doesn't even play edge.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't get me wrong, I feel like there's talent in this edge class, and there are guys who can be solid starters, but how many guys can really be elite pass rushers? I'm not sold that there are more than like one or two.
One, maybe, if you're being nice.
Exactly.
I mean, up until probably a month ago, I know this is going to make people very upset given his reputation on draft Twitter, I had Greg Russo as edge one up until probably a month ago. And I think it's become almost in vogue to penalize for guys that haven't played, because we can keep going over the same tape over and over again, and it becomes almost paralysis by overanalysis. Greg Russo is raw. I'm not going to sit here and defend that, but he was also productive, albeit in some cleanup work during the 19 season. I mean, he's easy to hate on, but I you could argue he's got the best, one of the better ceilings in the class. I wish his testing was better, but he's, you know, whatever. He's a guy I think is, who's almost become underappreciated for a class that isn't that great.
Yeah, and I agree. I'm going to be honest with you. I still have Rougeau as my number one.
Wow.
I know.
Oh, no.
A
little contrarian over here. People are going to hunt me down.
They're going to be in your mentions telling you how stupid you are.
It's like, oh, what, have you not watched edge rushers since, like, August? What's wrong with you? But, you know, I still have him as my edge one. Granted, it's really close. And granted, I don't have a super high grade on him, but I'm just not too high on too many guys in this class. I look at a guy like Gregory Rougeau. Is it Rougeau or Rougeau?
Rougeau. I already said Russo. That's Rousseau. What I
think. Yeah. Because I used to say Rougeau with the J, but I don't know.
Maybe he is of French descent. I have no idea.
Perhaps. I'm not sure, but regardless of how you pronounce his name, I feel like the tools are there, and it's kind of weird because, I mean, I feel like his pro day testing was pretty evident of how he is on tape. I feel like his first step is very good. I feel like he's a good athlete off the ball, and we saw his, you know, 10-yard split was 1.57, and he ran a 4.68 at 6 foot, at 6'6" and a half and 266 pounds.
Yeah.
So I feel like that was pretty apparent, but he's also not super elusive, I don't want to say elusive because that's a ball carrier term, but just his ability to change direction, I feel like is kind of underwhelming. I feel like he might be a little bit stiff in the ankles in terms of his ability to change direction, but I just look at a guy who's huge and he's fast and he
plays. I like how he uses his arms too. He's got really, really, really long arms, and he uses them to keep tackles off of him. Yeah. And he's really, really good with that.
Yeah, he does a very good job of that. And I feel like, yeah, his hands can stand to be a little bit quicker and diverse, but I feel like just his ability to lock guys out from his frame is particularly impressive to me. And is he going to be a stud? I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of leeway, a lot of room in either direction with most of these edge rushers in this class. But yeah, I still have Rizzo's number one. It's really close, but that's just where I'm at right now. Yeah. I feel like there's a high upside there.
I mean, I guess we'll just jump to his teammate then, who everyone seems to have fallen in love with. And that's I mean, there's a couple of them. There's Quincy Roche, but that isn't who I was alluding to. I was more getting at Jalen Phillips.
Yeah.
Who I think it's more, I think a lot of his hype is coming from the fact that everyone's looking for somebody. Yeah. And I know that there was a video put out by one of the aforementioned Brett Coleman earlier where he's a combination of the Watt brothers. Again, I disagree. Yeah, I see a lot of Whitney Merciless actually when I watch him, who came out of Illinois and played for the Texans majority of his career. And Whitney was a good player, had a really good career, got paid once, and you know, I think he's a really good edge too.
Yeah.
Like, and that's fine. Like, I don't think he does anything spectacularly well. I think he's a really good athlete. But I just struggle to see what some people are like wanting to see when they're putting stuff out there. I do like that he's scheme versatile given that size. He can probably put his hand in the dirt in 40 fronts and he can probably stand up in 30 fronts.
Yeah.
He's got I actually think he's got really good feet and good ankles and hips in terms of his fluidity. He's not really stiff-hipped. He's got some, you know, really good moves. He's got good length. I just think he's kind of he's a tweener, and I don't mean that in a bad way. He's just not big enough to stay in the 40 front. He's not small enough to go into coverage all the time.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, watching him, I feel like coverage, given his athletic profile isn't a strength of his but dropping back in coverage isn't. So that makes me think, you know, in a base 4-3, hand in the dirt might be the best fit for him. But again, I'm not 100% sure because there's a lot to like there. I feel like if he was in a 4-3, he could bulk up a little bit. Very good athlete, bursts well off the snap. I feel like he's pretty slippery in terms of just the flexibility of his hips.
I also like he's an effort player. He does bring it every down. Like, he's there for you.
Absolutely. And I feel like that effort and just how hard he plays shows up in his hands and just, you know, keeping his legs churning. I feel like that's, you know, something stands out to me is just how hard he plays. And, you know, he locks up with a guy at the point of attack, doesn't necessarily give up. He keeps fighting. And even if he doesn't get in the backfield, he doesn't necessarily like stay stagnant, which I like. The big thing I'm concerned about with him is the medicals.
He's had
concussion issues that caused him to retire when he was with UCLA, medically retire. And then he came back and was able to play again. And now, you know, we're looking at him as a potential, you know, late first, early second round pick.
I think he's going to go higher than that, man. This league is so starved for pass rushers. He's going to go, I think, top half, maybe top 20 at least.
It's possible. I feel like it's possible.
I wouldn't do it, but I'm just saying especially when you pop on like his NC State tape.
Yeah.
Like where he was all over.
Yeah.
Like whatever, man. Like that, but it's just what the nature of it is. Court pass rushers get pushed up the board. People that protect the passer get pushed up the board. Passers get pushed up the board.
Yeah.
So there's that. Let me run this by you because I want to see how you feel. I think it goes without saying the consensus number one is Kwity Paye for most people. I really don't have a need to touch on him. I actually have Joseph Osai as my edge three, or not Joseph Osai. Sorry, Joe Tryon as my edge three.
Okay.
Again, I think he's getting penalized for not playing, but he's 6'4", 250 pounds. I think he's schematically a 3-4 rush backer. I think that's just what he is.
Yeah, for sure.
And I feel like he's almost become not penalized, but almost like a forgotten man, where he is a really good pass rusher. Like, go watch his California tape in 2019 where he's playing Cal. He's got great burst, really good flexibility to bend the edge. He's really good with his hands and how strong he is. It depends on what you really like in terms of run defender, but I think he sets an edge okay, and he holds his own as a run. I don't think he's anything like a run stopper, quote unquote, but he's a lot of effort. You know, we in Chicago have gotten used to the term heart, hustle, and muscle. Like, he's all of that. He's bringing it to you every down, similar to the way Jalen Phillips is. He's someone I've really come to enjoy now that I've gone back and rewatched him over the past few months. But I think he's best served as like a true off ball outside linebacker in a 3-4 who you're just told to pin your ears back and go get him. So he's my edge 3.
Okay. Yeah. I can get behind that. I feel like looking at the edge rushers I have on my board right now, my top 3, I'll be honest, I have Rizzo 1, Zizo Jalari 2, and Quiddy Pay at number 3.
Okay.
But that 4 through like 12, I feel like is pretty fluid. Like, I have guys, you know, very clearly are in that top tier for me, who are kind of interchangeable. I feel like Joe Tryon is definitely up there for me. I think it was Washington State was the first game of his I liked and I was like really impressed by. And I agree. I feel like he's a set 3-4 edge type of guy, stand up and just, you know, go after the quarterback. He's a fast guy. I feel like he could get stronger. I feel like just his ability to get low and convert speed to power can be improved, but just the quickness.
I think his lower half lacks in power.
I agree.
And I think his upper body strength and his hand strength is all there.
Yeah.
I just think he could do himself some service by getting a little stronger in his lower half.
Yeah. I feel like watching him on tape, he measured in at 259 pounds at his pro day. I feel like he plays lighter than that. So I feel like he can add a little bit more weight.
Well, the thing I would be worried about with that is part of the reason I do say he is a 3-4 only backer is he is good in space. He can cover. He's almost a bit like a stronger Leonard Floyd up top, where Floyd, you were always like, he's almost there. He's almost there.
Yeah.
And I think he is the opposite, where he's going to get there, but he's also not quite what, because I think Floyd's an anomaly in coverage as an outside linebacker, as a 30 front guy, where it's just like, holy crap, he's covering tight ends step for step.
Exactly.
But
you don't see too many of those guys around.
No. And versus Tryon is, he's not going to hurt you in coverage, is my point.
Yeah.
And I think that is because of his athleticism and his footwork and his size. He's a good size to be there. But I'll let you kind of jump in. I think we're probably just given our time constraints. I'll let you finish up what you were saying on Osai, and then I'll wrap it up. And we'll finish off our edge defenders next episode as well.
Yeah. So with Osai, I feel like there's a lot of potential there. Absolutely. And I feel like that's what could get him drafted pretty early. My guess right now is early second for him. I feel like, you know, there are rumblings he could go first, but I think he's a second round guy. And he's newer to the game, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know exactly how long he's been playing, but he doesn't have an extensive career that some of these other prospects might have. And I think that shows up. Sometimes he looks a little lost in terms of his plan at the point of attack, and his pad level can be a little bit too high, but that athleticism really stands out to me. I feel like he bursts well off the snap, very much a bendy edge rusher in my opinion. And there's a lot of room to work with there. I feel like he's a pretty big project, I guess you could say, but there is a lot of potential there.
I mean, just like I've got pictures of both him and Tryon pulled up, very similar in terms of how they're built.
Yeah.
Very, very similar builds.
Yeah,
which would almost be considered undersized in this league. But yeah, well, I don't think I do apologize to our listeners who are going to hear this. I mean, we went an hour and 15 minutes, but I don't think we anticipated the tackles being that long. We'll finish up our edge rankings and our edge discussion along with our other hog mollies going forward, either later this week, maybe over the weekend or sometime next week. But we're definitely going to keep getting you guys coverage. As always, keep your hard hat ready. And this is the Lunch Pail Draftcast signing off. Enjoy your weekend, guys.
Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative, along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu.
Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.